The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
The United States, Carl Thomas and Marion McKeown. Now, I'm going to start in an unusual place, perhaps, Marion. There's an old saying in the news business that dog bites man is not a news story, but man bites dog is. So where do you put woman who wants to be vice president to Donald Trump shoots dog in that list?
Well, you know, it's this is the most bizarre story and the most bizarre thing. First of all, we should say we're talking about Kristi Noem, who is the governor of South Dakota, who has been a big insider in the MAGA camp. Donald Trump Jr., very close to her, has gone on a number of fundraising sort of sprees with her for her re-election up in South Dakota. She was regarded as one of these people who would be a perfect vice president for Donald Trump. During lockdown, she was responsible for the biggest super spreader event when she allowed the Sturgis rally to take place, the big motorcycle rally, 250,000 people. I've seen her speak a number of times. She's got that feisty, sassy kind of MAGA woman thing that the crowds just eat up. But anyway, to get to the immediate story, she's bringing out a memoir of sorts, and it's been excerpted by The Guardian, and the bit that they honed in on, unsurprisingly, is she described how she had a 14-month-old dog that she just didn't like and found difficult to train, and that one day she took him on a pheasant shoot and he was running through the field having the time of his life and not doing what he was supposed to do, apparently, chasing birds. And she says in her book, at that moment, I decided he had to die. So I'm sorry, but, you know, this is just like, you think, is this a spoof? But apparently not. She took him to a gravel pit and she shot him dead. And then in the same killing spree, she then decided that there was a goat on the farm that she didn't like because he was smelly and cranky. And she shot him dead too. And in response to the public outrage about this, she says, you know, this happens on farms. We just had to shoot three horses the other day. It's like, when you're in a hole, don't keep digging.
Okay,
you know?
Cal, but, might this appeal to Republican voters?
Matt, in America, I don't know how it is in Ireland, but in America, people love their dogs sometimes more than they love their own children. I think this was one of the dumbest political moves in the history of political moves. Where was her editor on this? Where was somebody saying, you can't say this. You're going to offend dog lovers all over the country. They're not going to support you for vice president. This is just crazy stuff. I agree with Marion. I mean, I think it's basically suicide. She has, kept herself away from the vice presidential nomination. I don't think Trump's going to pick her now.
Yeah, because, you know, there's a saying, Cal, and I say this as a dog lover, and I find this story appalling, but there's a saying, there's no such thing as a bad dog. There's just bad owners. If that dog was misbehaving, a lot of it was probably down to how poorly she trained it.
Well, that's exactly right. And if the dog, she said in the book, didn't respond to training, then she could give it over to an animal shelter or the Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. There are a lot of people who would love to have dogs and could take care of them. But to do this and to admit it openly and basically defend it, as this happens on farms all the time, is just crazy politically and in every other way I can think of.
But Marion, you've heard her tell other stories that previously have given you reason to have doubts about her.
Yeah, I was at an event that she did not that long ago, actually, and she described, and you wonder, if you're wondering where she got her bizarre behavior from, this might give an insight. She described how when she was 10 years old, her father told her he was going to take her on a camping trip. They lived in the middle of nowhere. So she went off on her little pony and he was with her for part of the way. And then he said, oh, you know what? I can't go. You've got to go on your own. At this stage, she said it was dark. It was very late. It was the middle of nowhere. They could hear all these howls of wolves and bears and God knows what. And he said to her, just go. It's over the next mountain. Off you go. And he turned around. So she said,
what age was she?
10. So even though she was terrified, she said she proceeded. And then she kept hearing all these noises of snarling bears and described how she was petrified. So she went back the next day and her mother said, oh, it's okay. Your dad actually secretly followed you. But he secretly followed her so he could pretend to be a bear who was about to attack her. What is wrong with these people, frankly? And she was describing this as, oh, shucks, this is what it's like growing up in the country. You know, this is where I got my spine of steel from. And, you know, again, as Cal said, she was somebody who was regarded as sort of a like, I've seen crowds erupt when she comes on stage, MAGA crowds. They love her. And she was seen as a great choice for a potential vice president. As Carl said, that's over now.
It is over now. Well, let's move on to other things. Tell us what the latest from the trial, the Stormy Daniels trial, to give it a shorthand name. And Donald Trump been found guilty, was it, on 7 charges of, well, what exactly was it that he was found guilty of? Contempt of court, I think, was it, Cal?
Yeah, violating the gag order of the judge. I do think, though, Matt, whatever you think of Trump and the charges against him and the rest, that he does have a point in saying that while he was ordered gagged, everybody else, including the disgraced lawyer Michael Cohen, Stormy Daniels, everybody else could say whatever they wanted about Trump. They could claim that he was guilty. They could say anything. And he was prohibited, supposedly, from saying anything, although he did say everything, which is why he's now been fined $9,000. But in terms of the people who are supporting him, I don't think this is going to matter at all. And as far as $9,000 go, that's just pocket change to him, unlike it would be to you and I.
I wonder, is it though? Maybe he'll do a whip round from some of his MAGA supporters to raise the money. But is it not, Mary McCone, a fair point that it is quite bizarre that we would expect Donald Trump to keep himself stum during the proceedings, but that those who are giving evidence against him or who are subject to the complaints are being allowed to say what they want to say?
Yeah, I think, you know what, I think it would be better if people, whether you're a witness, whether you're a lawyer, whether you're the defendant, as Donald Trump is, for people not to be running around making allegations outside of this case. I think that there is a case for the judge to say, look, would you all just please shut up? And what you've got to say, you can say it in the courtroom when you're under, you know, when you're giving testimony. But that isn't how First Amendment rights work in the States. And there is a different approach to trials. Like, there's no sub judice, there's no, you know, it's much more loose and, to me, much more potentially damaging for defendants and for the outcome and for the influencing of a jury pool. But this is where we are. I think, Trump will probably use this, even though he's got his multi-billion-dollar windfall, allegedly, he'll probably use this as a fundraiser and as more evidence, look how I'm being persecuted, because that is the shtick, that's his campaign, you know, message at the moment. And I suspect that if, you know, the judge threatened him with jail, I suspect that if he was sent to prison, that would play exactly into his hands and the whole narrative of being persecuted.
But does it look, though, at the same time, Cal, as if he's struggling a little bit with being almost shackled by the trial, even if he does get the occasional opportunity walking in or walking out of courthouse to have a blast at various people, that the actual proceedings themselves are having something of a toll on him and also stops him going out on the stump doing the fundraising like he likes to do, doesn't give him his chance to have his voice as much as he likes to hear himself have that voice?
Well, I think Trump feels that with a Manhattan jury and the overwhelming number of New Yorkers having voted for Joe Biden and Democrats generally, that the fix is already in. He knows or thinks that he's going to be convicted. So he's just revving up his support for who knows what. I mean, it can't be for the next trial because there's one after another coming. I think that he's banking on an appeal. There will be an appeal. If he is convicted of these, what I regard as, you should pardon the expression, trumped-up charges, elevating a lapsed misdemeanor to the felony level, just so Alvin Bragg, the district attorney, can proceed with it. But I think the appeal will last after the election, and then who knows what will happen.
Marion, before we actually go to the college campuses issue, I see that again the White House seems to be talking up the chances of a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken urging Hamas to accept what he calls extraordinarily generous offers from Israel that could lead to a permanent ceasefire. But should we believe this, given that a couple of months ago Joe Biden was talking up a possible ceasefire that never happened?
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right, Matt. Joe Biden insisted that, said repeatedly there would be a ceasefire
within 2 weeks.
And then he said it was coming in the next week, it would start on a Monday, etc. So it's understandable there is some skepticism. However, based on briefings, you know, with the NSC and the Department of State that they've been doing for the media, I have to say they do sound a bit more hopeful about this. The White House desperately wants a ceasefire. Not just have you got all of these protests roiling campuses all over the states, but you've got the conventions coming down the pipe. And, you know, we already know that protesters, if this war is still ongoing, as it looks like it will be, are going to target the Democratic Convention in Chicago when it happens in August. The White House really does want a ceasefire. Anthony Blinken, we don't know the details of it, but as I understand it, in exchange for 33 hostages, and again, I'm not sure if these details have been nailed down, Israel is talking about a protracted period of calm and about allowing some people to return to northern Gaza. So that seems to be, as I say, Anthony Blinken is urging Hamas to accept it. We don't know if they will or not. Nothing constructive has happened. So far, there's very little reason to believe if you look at what's been happening over the last several months. But as I say, the White House is really pushing hard on this. Anthony Blinken is pushing hard. And they're also holding the carrot over Israel of this mega deal, as they're calling it, with Saudi Arabia, which would normalise relations between Israel and Saudi Arabia. Now, and Saudi Arabia has made it clear that it wants Palestine to factor in that.
Carl, of course, what's going on at the universities is catching an enormous amount of attention. And in New York, Columbia University has started suspending students after demonstrators defied the deadline for clearing what's been known as the Gaza Solidarity Encampment. How much of this can be put down to the universities being terrified that they're going to lose the money that they get from big business donors, particularly those connected to the Jewish community?
Yes, you're absolutely right. And several big Jewish donors have already said that if this continues without a crackdown by the universities, I'm thinking Robert Kraft, who is the owner of the New England Patriots professional football team, and a number of others said they're not going to give money anymore. And not only the donations, Matt, but the tuition at some of these universities is incredibly high, up to $90,000 a year at Columbia. And I'm just wondering how many parents are going to want to continue to support these schools when these kinds of things are going on. But there's another element, too, and I've written about it. Not only the New York Post, but other media outlets have now exposed the underwriting of some of these demonstrators by George Soros's foundations and the Rockefeller Brothers foundations. A lot of these people are paid demonstrators. They're not students at the school. Matter of fact, they're much older than most students. And I'm glad that is finally being exposed. This is a political operation more than anything else. And just a couple of hours ago, Columbia University has announced they're banning the press from covering these things on the campus. Under other circumstances, I would oppose that. But since a lot of this is being fueled by the media, then I think that in this case, it's a pretty good idea.
Really? As an experienced newspaper man of 60 years standing, you're agreeing with censorship on a university campus so that the media can't report what's happening?
They've had their time. They've been at it for weeks. There are no new arguments. There are rights of the students who are not demonstrating, who are studying for final exams coming up in a couple of weeks, who want to have a graduation ceremony that many of them didn't have when they graduated from high school because of COVID. And now they're being told by some universities that the commencements are going to be canceled. And Marion is absolutely right on the demonstrations. It's reminding me of the 1968 Democratic Convention in Chicago when anti-Vietnam War demonstrators showed up and disrupted that and practically handed the election to Richard Nixon.
Okay, Carl, I read the piece that you sent me from the New York Post about George Soros paying student radicals who were fueling nationwide explosion of Israel-hating protests. But when you read down through the piece, the sums of money are tiny. It would have only maybe funded a handful of protesters around the country. Marion, what do you make of what's going on? Is there a conspiracy afoot here that the students have been manipulated by the hard left to cause trouble?
Well, Matt, I've been to three of the campuses. I was briefly at Columbia and I was at USC campus and also UCLA and speaking to students from both sides. Cal is right in that a lot of people who are on campus are not necessarily students. But what I find really dispiriting about it is the level of disinformation on both sides. And just to give you an example of this, I spoke with three young Jewish women who weren't on the campus of UCLA yesterday, and they told me that the Palestinian demonstrators had been attacking pro-Israel demonstrators with tasers, with pepper spray, and that there had been a huge amount of violence. Now, I followed this up with security at UCLA and with security guards, and I called the college, and they said they had no reports of this. So, and then I also spoke with Palestinian protesters who believe that October 7th, that the atrocities of October 7th have never been proven by Israel. They've said, well, where you know, show us the proof that 1,200 people were killed. There is no trust on either side. And there's, but I did not witness any violence. I think that the campus authorities for at University of Southern California, which is a private university, $60,000, $70,000 a year in tuition fees, the commencement speech, the valedictorian speech by a young biomedical engineer, an outstanding student, was pulled. Her name was Asna Tabasson. She's a Muslim from Southeast Asia, and she hadn't even written her speech, and the authorities decided, no, we can't have her speaking because she had a link on her Instagram account to a support group for Palestine. Now, that is just outrageous, as it's outrageous, in my view, that Columbia is blocking media from entering the campus, and Columbia has just announced now that it's starting to expel students as well. I think that this has all, these students have a right to protest both sides. As I said, I find it really dispiriting. I don't think that the pro-Palestinian protesters are ever going to get their goals, which is they want the universities to divest, to take money out of companies that are invested in Israel. It's never going to happen. I think what will happen is the end of term may actually put it, you know, dampen these when there are no students on campus during the summer. But up until then, I think it's going to continue, and I think that the college authorities, we saw appalling action in Texas where police stormed peaceful protesters. They sprayed them with pepper spray at the University of Texas, and they charged them with horses. This is not acceptable. It's okay. Not an acceptable way to treat students who are protesting.
Cal, let's talk about President Joe Biden, because since the start of 2024, how many times have White House communication staff had to correct him?
Well, at least 148 times, according to the White House, which leads me to believe there are many more. We've talked about this over many, many weeks and even months on this program, Matt. It's just so very clear to anyone except the most partisan person that Joe Biden has some serious cognitive issues. He talked about his uncle being shot down and eaten by cannibals. Well, that never happened. He's talked about one of his sons being killed in war. He talked about being arrested on the way to visit Nelson Mandela in prison in South Africa. One thing after another, he has to be constantly on a teleprompter or have extensive note cards, even when he's meeting with heads of state. He mispronounces names. He calls people by the wrong name, refers to them by the wrong office. There's just a very serious problem here. And the fact that the White House Communications Office has to continually, and I mean continually, daily and sometimes more than once a day, correct his remarks is very, very telling.
God, it reminds me of somebody else. What's his name, that fella it reminds me of? Donald Trump.
I'm not sure if that's my cue to enter the conversation. It's interesting seeing Donald Trump coming in and out of court. And you know, he looks diminished to me. He looks frail. I think he might have fired his hairstylist because his hair is a mess, something we haven't seen before. But also, I think that this is the big thing that hasn't been covered at the Donald Trump event.
Okay.
And there have been so few this year. He has constantly been stumbling over words, saying things that are patently untrue. And I think that this is an election where both sides,
Okay, I have to leave it, Marion, unfortunately, but God help us when we get to TV debates between the two of them. It could be something else. Anyway, thank you very much, Marion McKeown and Cal Thomas.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.